When I graduated from seminary, and that's been a little more than 30 years ago now, I was pretty sure that I was ready to go out and just and run a church somewhere, be a senior pastor, and just get the job done. Fortunately, God had better plans for me, knew me better than I knew myself. And so my first call wasn't to be a single pastor or a senior pastor. It was to be an associate pastor with an amazing pastor. His name is Ted Faulkner. He was at that time the same age I am now. I thought he was an old man at that time. So that was 30 years ago. He's 87 now instead of 57, and really looks about like he did then. He's in great shape, just as sharp as he ever was. When I first went to work with him, he really took the mentoring thing pretty seriously, and he would say things like, the number one rule for ministry is this, and then he would give me his wisdom about ministry. Or the number two rule for ministry is this, and then he would give that to me. And this went on all the time, kind of like, probably some of you have watched the show NCIS. You know, Gibbs has his rules for police work, and they've actually been collected. Yes, Max has hit his underlings on the head. I don't know if Ted ever did that to me, but he probably could have. So I was thinking about all, and so Ted was doing this before Gibbs ever did. So about a year ago, I started pulling together a list of the things that I remember him saying. And so I'm not going to go through all of them. I've come up with about 14, so I'm going to just give you a sampling. Number one, rule for ministry, always be the last one in line at potlucks. He taught me that. Number two, try never to be surprised in a board meeting. Another really important one. You should know what's going to happen before it happens. He insisted on that. Number nine, you have one tool in your toolbox, he used to tell me, prayer. And if you fail to pray with somebody in a hospital room or after a counseling session, that's like malpractice. You should always have prayer with people. And finally, never take your self seriously, but always take your ministry seriously. So his rules covered everything from sermon preparation to sermon delivery to how best to take a vacation. I mean, he had pretty much everything covered. And I've remembered all of these things. And actually, when I put this list together, I sent them to him, and he had a few suggestions for ones I'd forgotten. But as I was thinking about that this week, it occurred to me that I've also followed his example on some other things. So for instance, one of the things I remember him always doing was if he would meet with a woman in his office, he would always leave the door open. And one of the things he would say, which is biblical, is you need to even avoid the appearance of sin. That needs to be important. And Ted was and is a huge flirt, so this was really important for him to do that. But the other thing that he did, the way he handled money, if somebody handed him a check or some cash or something for the offering, he would stop whatever he was doing, and this happens for pastors, and he would take care of it. He would make sure that got delivered immediately where it needed to go. And so one of the lessons I learned from him is that there are all kinds of traps that leaders can fall into. Temptations that leaders can fall into without ever really meaning to. I was thinking I think people that get caught, for instance, stealing or embezzling from their businesses or their organizations, I don't think they ever set out to do that. They didn't go into ministry or into leadership thinking, I'm gonna steal from my organization. No, what usually happens is they think to themselves, man, I'm really strapped for cash right now. I'm just going to borrow a little bit, and then I'll pay it back later. Nobody has to know. And so they just kind of slowly fall into the sin, fall into the disobedience, and they do it without even realizing it. And they think it's no big deal until suddenly they're in big, big trouble. I see that all the time with leaders. It's kind of like you've probably heard of the frog in the pot of boiling water. Maybe you've heard of this before. They say that if you put a frog in room temperature water and put it on a stove and bring it slowly to a boil, that they don't realize the temperature and the change in temperature until it's too late, until they're literally boiled to death. And I think we can easily fall into the same kind of trap if we're not careful. The world can influence us in ways that we've never even imagined until we find ourselves suddenly in boiling water and in lots of trouble. Running away from the world, however, is not an option for us. That would seem like it would be one answer, right? Just get away from it, get as far from it as you can, from any temptation, any test. But Jesus calls us not to leave the world, but to go into the world. We have to enter fully into it. That's where our ministry is. We're called apart on days like this to worship, to study, to fellowship, to grow in our spiritual life. But he calls us out into the world to do ministry. And that's where the tests are. That's where the temptations are. He says we are to be in the world, but not of the world. And 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 14 and 15 puts it like this. So you must live as God's obedient children. Don't slip back into your old ways of living to satisfy your own desires. You didn't know any better then, but now you must be holy in everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy. So how do we do that? How are we holy as God is holy? How can we resist being conformed to the world so that we might instead be transformed by God's love and power? And that's really the question that we're going to be exploring for the next month or so. How do we resist the sin and disobedience that come when we follow after the things of this world? How do we resist conforming to the very powerful cultural influences of the world? Because it's real easy to fall into that. Real, real easy. Like I said, sometimes we get caught in it and we're in boiling water before we even realize it. Fortunately, the Bible has a lot to say about this. And Paul, in particular, has a lot to say about this. The book of Romans really is all about this idea of what God has done for us and how we then are to live. The book of Romans begins with what's called, the old-time preachers will say there's a believing side to the gospel and there's a behaving side to the gospel. Romans begins with the believing side. So Paul is wanting to help the people think theologically. And so he goes into this whole thing about justification by faith or by grace through faith. In other words, we are made right by grace. And we enter into that grace. We're saved by faith, and it's a free gift of God. That's what grace is. It's a free gift of God, and that's really what the whole first part of Romans is about. You can't do anything to save yourself. It's a free gift, and Paul wants to make that very clear. You can't do it yourself, and no matter how holy you are or how good you think you are, you can never get there. But then we move into what would be the behaving side or the holy side of it. And we know that he makes this transition in chapter 12 because of the word therefore. It's almost as if he says, you've received these mercies of God, you've received this grace, this love, therefore you need to act like it. Therefore you need to live your life as if you understand what has been done for you. So we read in Romans 12, beginning at verse 1, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, which he's just gone into great detail explaining, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Do not conform, let God transform you. Now, what I hear in that is there's some defiance in the way that we're to live in relationship to the world. We're not to let the world steamroll over us. We're not simply to adapt and let the values of this world, no matter how powerful they are, become our values. That's not who we are. That's not what we're supposed to be. When I think of that, one story that a lot of times will come to my mind is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember that story from the book of Daniels? In that story, these three young men, Jewish young men, are living in exile in Babylon. And these guys they're smart, they're handsome, they got it going on. They're so smart and so talented, they're actually working in the palace. They're working for King Nebuchadnezzar, the ruler of the Babylonian Empire. And they're succeeding. They're doing great. But then you may remember that Nebuchadnezzar builds for himself a golden idol, and he demands that everybody bow down to it. Everybody is to worship him. And you may remember that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they won't do it. They will not be conformed to this world. Even though they were working right for him, they weren't going to do it. They would not conform. And even the fiery furnace didn't change their minds. And it's a great story. We know how that works. When it comes to choosing between conforming to this world or being transformed into the image of Jesus Christ, we don't have a choice. We only have that choice. And it's like a battle. It's going on. Paul even says, he compares it to a war. And he says that we have been given spiritual weapons and spiritual armor. Not physical weapons, not physical armor, but spiritual weapons and spiritual armor in order to fight this. C.S. Lewis put it like this. I've always loved this quote. Enemy-occupied territory. That is what this world is. Christianity is the story of how the rightful king has landed, you might say landed in disguise, and is calling us to take part in a great campaign of sabotage. It is our job as followers of Jesus to disrupt the corrupt values of this world, to resist being conformed to this world, to believe and to behave in ways that reflect the values of our king and not the kings of this world. And it's always going to be our job to find ways where we might do both of those things a little bit better. One preacher I was reading this week said that we must become like spiritual meteorologists. So we need to become aware of the atmosphere that we're in, because the atmosphere has an impact on us. And we need to determine how that weather is changing us, how it's impacting us, and if that impact is of God or is it not of God. And we need to know that so we can resist it if we need to. I believe in the Message Bible actually translates Romans 12:2. It kind of says the same thing. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. In other words, we need to allow Christ in us to be critical, to see the world in critical ways, and to not just accept whatever gets spoon-fed to us. I believe that doing accurate spiritual meteorology requires that we get to know the one who controls even the weather. In other words, we need to know who Jesus is. We need to have a personal relationship with him, because that's the only way that's going to happen. It's the only way that's going to happen. And speaking of meteorology, I've got a funny story I want to tell you that has a point. Actually, you'll see in a minute. About a week ago or so, Tammy and I were in Quincy, and we stopped by Home Depot to pick a few things up while we were there. And we were clear in the back of the store looking at some things. And I turned around, and I came face-to-face with somebody that I knew really, really well. I mean, really well. But I couldn't immediately place where I knew him from. So I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And he very politely said hi and just kept going. And then I stopped and I thought, And it occurred to me that I had just greeted Brian Inman, the weather guy at WGEM, who comes into my house twice a day. I mean, he's there every single night before I go to bed. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. I thought I did, but I didn't really know him. And by the way, he looks a lot different in person than he does than he does on camera. But it got me thinking about this. How many of us are going about living our lives conforming to the world, to this world? Maybe we're aware of the stories. Maybe we could pick Jesus out of a crowd. Maybe we could recognize his face. But we don't really know him. And he doesn't really know us. We've been conforming to the world so much that we haven't allowed him to transform us in any way. Therefore, Paul says, offer yourselves as a living sacrifice. Give yourself wholly over to this. As the women's choir sang today, surrender it all to him. That's what it looks like to live a faithful life. That's what it looks like when our believing and our behaving begin to match up. And that is something that the world can never defeat. Let's pray. Lord, you have called us to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, who is not just our Savior, but who is Lord of our lives, who leads us in our living. Help us to resist the things of this world, that we might be in line with him always. Help us to get to know him. Help us to listen to him. Help us to pay attention to the things he says and what he calls us to do. And let us follow him.